Boker Tov, and welcome back to another in our ongoing series of Shirim on Daf Yomi. We are now in the middle of Daf Kuftet Zayin Amud Aleph Masechet Yevamot, in the middle of an analysis of the first Mishnah of the 15th Perek that described different circumstances under which we would or would not accept a woman's testimony that her husband died while they were traveling together and then allow her to remarry. And we said that if there was Shalom Bein Olam Benan, Shalom Ba'olam, then the credibility is there, but katata de no levena, or mochama ba'olam, then it is not. Now, in the previous podcast, we analyzed why mochama ba'olam, why if there's war going on in that region, she would not be believed, because she would run away from the war and see him stabbed and assume that he died, and that's what we call bididami. But what about the opposite case? So here we start. Let's first of all define what that means. A woman says to her husband, I want you to divorce me. That happens often, and that doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to then act in a way that's going to lead to him becoming usher to her. Because remember, as I mentioned in the last podcast, the concern here is that if they're not getting along, she may come back and lie and say he was killed, and that way she'll remarry, probably be careful not to have kids. When he then shows up, she becomes asur to him because asur lebaal, asur leboel, and so therefore we don't believe her. Elabomer lebaala geirashtani. So rather, she turns to her husband and says, you already did divorce me. But Rav Hamnuna's ruling we accept would be that we would already believe her. If a woman turns to her husband and says, you did divorce me, then we believe her. A woman might lie about that in front of the Beit Din, but not if her husband's present. She doesn't have the ability to look him straight in the face and say that unless it's true. Therefore, if she turns around and says it, then we believe her, in which case she's already a grusha, and whether he's dead or not doesn't really affect anything here. So that can't be the case. So the answer is, she turns around and says to him, you divorced me in the presence of this maid and that aid. And we ask those aidim, and the aidim say that no such thing happened. So we could tell there's katata. She's trying to convince the Beit Din that she's divorced. She really does want to be out of this marriage, but she hasn't been successful. Good. So now, my time of the katata. So the next question is, what's the reason that katata ruins her credibility? Because we already see that she's a liar from this first context, which she said, you guys were witnesses that he divorced me, and they really weren't. So therefore, we don't believe her about this. She's just lost all her credibility. No, it's not because of that. It's because since we know that she wants to leave psychologically, and this has a lot to do with the psychological studies of eyewitnesses to crimes and how they see things differently based on their own psychological tendencies and biases. A woman is in a circumstance like that, and she's out and sees that her husband fell off a bridge, she'll assume that he died, she'll come back and say he died, even though indeed he could be alive. So my benayu, what's the difference between these two approaches? If he's the one who generates the katata. So on the one hand, clearly there's bad relations, and she may indeed as a result say he's dead when she only thought he was dead. On the other hand, we have no reason to think that she lies. So according to the reason that she's a liar, that doesn't exist here. We're going back to the question we saw yesterday about Eidachad b'milchama. So now, Eidachad b'ktata, that doesn't mean one guy witnessed that they were fighting. We all know that they're fighting. But they left here in a spat. And then she comes back, and a witness comes back and says, I saw that he died. My time in Eidachad, so it all depends on why we generally believe Eidachad. One reason is, we saw this yesterday again in the context of Muhammad, and that is that something that's going to come to light, a person won't lie about. And since, if the guy's really alive, testifying that he's dead is something that's going to eventually be revealed to be alive, so we trust him. So the same case here. It's the other reason. The reason we believe one aid is that she, knowing that she gets married based on Piyad Echad, and then the husband that does show up, she's really messed up, she's going to be extremely careful to confirm his story. And here, in this case, because she and the husband weren't getting along, she's not going to be that careful to check. As far as she's concerned, the worst thing that will happen was he'll show up, and then she'll be free of him anyways because she'll have married to another guy. So the answer is take. We can't settle that. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda, at the end of our Mishnah, said that she is not believed until she comes weeping and with her clothes torn and really exhibiting real signs of mourning. So according to you then, a pikachat who understands how to play this game can get married, and a shota who doesn't understand and is just going to walk up and say that my husband died won't be able to get married. Therefore, Chacham say, we don't make that a stipulation. If the woman comes and says that I saw him dead, we believe her. And by the way, shota here doesn't mean a classic shota. It just means somebody who doesn't know how to play this game. So there was a woman who came to Rabbi Yehuda's beitim, the same Rabbi Yehuda. Amrila, so the Talmidim told her, Safti ba'alech, weep for your husband, ki'ri'imanech, tear your clothes, satri'mazyech, uncover your hair, and afu'a shikra. So that means they taught her to lie. She came, ready to testify that her husband died, and they told her to put on the whole morning show for Rabbi Yehuda. So why could that? Why did they coach her to lie? The answer is Inun Karabonan Sirlu. These Talmidim disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda. And they held like Rabbanan, and then so as far as they're concerned, then she's already believed. You should do this so that he'll be mocked you also. Good. Now we have a series of machlokot with Mithil, which as we had in the previous parakim about Miyun. Now we have this machloket about the credibility and in what case she's believed to say he died. So Beit Hillel, the first machloket is about under what circumstance. Beit Hillel, Omreim lo shamano el rabba min ha-katsir, uvotam medina, uchmaseh shaya. Beit Hillel says, we only know that a woman is believed if she comes and says, my husband died, dafka when he was out in the wheat field harvesting, and only if it's in the same place that she's reporting it, not where she actually traveled abroad, which is against our whole flow of Mishnayot about Medina Tayyam. Because there was a particular story that happened like that in faraway history. And so Beit Hillel says, since that was the model case that they used, that's the only case where we can apply it. Amrulam Beit Shammai. So Beit Shammai said, Achata ba min ha-katsir, achata ba min ha-zeitim, whether it's coming from the wheat field, or she's coming from an olive grove, she's coming from a vineyard, and whether she's coming in this country, or she's from country to country. The reason the Chachamim said that it was the wheat field is because that's the case that was happening there. Right? But it could be any case. And here you see something that's somewhat unusual. And Hillel ended up ruling like Beit Shammai, as we see from our Mishnayot. So now we see an expansion on this and the background to the story. Tanya, Amru Lam Beit Shammai Lebeit Hillel. So the expansion is Beit Shammai says, the Divrechem Emli Ala Ksir Chitim. So according to you, it's not just harvesting, it's harvesting wheat. Ksir Soriminayin, how do I know if she's harvesting barley? If she's coming from a barley harvest, she's believed. Veni Ala Kotser. And now I will only say if the guy, because according to the models, the index story, she came and reported that her husband, who was harvesting wheat, the scythe killed him or something. So, Botzer, Mosek, Goder, Oded, Minayin. How do I know Oder, Minayin? How do I know if he's doing one of the other malachot in the field, like harvesting grapes, or Mosek is harvesting olives, or putting up a fence, or hoeing, or something else? The story happened in a wheat field, but it would apply everywhere. There's no reason to distinguish. And the same way, and this is where Beit Shammai really is disagreeing, the stronger disagreement is, and we'll see why, is that Beit Shammai says the story happened in the same place where she came to the Beit Din. She didn't travel. It happened right there. But it applies anywhere. So why do Beit Hillel disagree? The answer is, in the same state where there are people who know her and her husband, she'll be afraid to lie because they'll recognize him if he's alive. But from one country to another, people don't travel that much. She won't be afraid to say, my husband died in Spain, and nobody's going to know whether or not that's really true, she won't be afraid to lie. That's Beit Hillel's original position. Beit Shammai. So Beit Shammai says, you know, there are travelers. So she won't be afraid to lie. So now, my Maisa Shaya, what was the story? You know, Shmuel. Shilfei Katsir Chitin Hayu. There were people who were cutting harvested wheat. And it was at the end of the season of harvesting wheat in July, and 10 men went to cut wheat. So it wasn't a scythe, a snake bit one of them and died. And his wife walked him to Beit Din and said, my husband was bit by a snake and died out of the katsir. They went and checked and saw that what she said was true. So then they came and said, and perhaps they said this because we didn't really need to go and check. Good. So that means that the original story was in a Katsir Chitim, and therefore Ben Hillel in the original formulation said, and that we can only apply it to that case. So now, there is a Machlok, Rabbi Chananya ben Akiva and Rabbanan, about the permissibility of putting Mechatat, the water to be used for Paraduma, on a boat. And we'll see what's behind it. So we suggest Neymar Bechanan and Kabi Rabbanan Pluta Bechamet Hilakimipalgi. The Machlok and Chananim and Kabi and Akiva and Rabbanan may be parallel to the original Machlok Bechamet Hilal that later became not a Machlok. The Tanya, Lo Yisadna Mechatat Ve'efra Chatat, the water for the Paraduma, meaning it's already mixed with the ashes, or just the ashes. The Avrembi Arden of Isfina, you can't bring them on a boat in the Arden. You also can't stand on one side of the Jordan and throw it to the other side. Or put it on a raft and send it across. You can't put it on a behemoth. On somebody else's back. Unless the guy's feet were in the ground. Meaning, were on the ground. Meaning, not in the water. You can walk over a bridge. And this rule applies to the Yarden or any other river. He says it only applies to a boat, not to somebody standing in the water or anything else, and it only applies in the Yarden, just like the original story that happened that caused this decree. So it sounds like the Rabbanan say, just because an original story that motivated a decree or an ordinance happen a particular way, doesn't mean the Rabbanan limited the application to that kind of case. They were expansive. Rechanim Akiva, that were Korbeit Hillel. Rechanim Akiva says it's only the Arden, only a boat. Therefore, it seems like he says, like Beit Hillel, that we only believe a woman if she comes from wheat field. So the Rabbanan would answer, no, Anadam Rinaf, Korbeit Hillel. What we say works even according to Beit Hillel. Ad Kamokam Beit Hillel Hatam, why did Beit Hillel say that we only believe her if she comes from wheat field? Let me show the Mirta, because of this reasonable thing, which is that she's only afraid of getting caught in a lie nearby. Makom Karav Mirtat, only nearby. Makom Rachakol Mirtat. Hacha Mali Arden, Mali Shar Naharot. But here, there's no rational reason to distinguish between the Arden and any other river. Rabbi Chanani ben Akiva Amar Lacha, he would answer, Ana da Amri Afla Beit Shammai. Ad Kan Lo Kam Beit Shammai Hatam, Le Mishum Di Yi Daika Min Saba. And Rechanukavi said, what I'm saying even works to Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai say that we believe her whenever she says her husband died, because we've got another factor here, is that she's always going to check very carefully to make sure that the testimony is correct. Mali Makom Karav, Mali Makom Rachok, or that if she saw it, that she saw it accurately, that he really died. That's why Muhammad we say not. So why do I care if it's nearby or not nearby? And it's her, we're giving her a lot more, Beit Shammai is giving her a lot more credibility. We're believing that she believes, she's testifying to what she really believes happened. The only question is, can we trust that she saw it accurately? And that's where the issue of war comes in. Hacha mishumaisa shahaya? Here it's because of the story that happened, and we're given some insight here into the story that happened about a boat that was coming on the Arden, was specifically on the Arden. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi quotes the story. There was a story. Actually, we have it in the Gemara here. Okay. Here we go. It's at the end of our Gemara. Here, a particular story happened, an unfortunate incident took place. Rabbanan, as sort of a commemoration, made the gzera on that particular place. It was on a boat in the Yardanes. They said, you can't carry mechatat on a boat in the Yardanes. It's nothing to do with anything else. It's not based on a rational concern that may apply elsewhere. It's a sort of a commemorative gzera, almost like the gzera the Rabbanan made against wearing the nailed shoes, sandal and sumar, on Shabbat. Because of a disaster that happened once on Shabbat, when they were in a cave and they stampeded and people died, then it's a gzera. But it's not because of a particular concern, it's a commemorative zera. So my ma'aseh shai, what's the story? There was a guy who was bringing the materials for the tahara down the Yarden in a boat. It turned out that there was exactly the shear, the metame, of a dead body that was stuck into the hull of the boat. And messed everything up. At that point, the Meitzitz decreed that a person should not carry those materials of the Paraduma in a boat on the Yarden, and therefore, says it's only in the Yarden, only on a Sfina, because that's where they had the Gzeira. Good. The next Mishnah continues in Machlok of Bechamed Hillel about the believability, but here it comes to the consequence. Remember, if a woman's husband dies, she also collects a ketubah. So, Shammai says that based on this testimony, she marries and she also collects the ketubah. Beit Hillel says she can marry, but she can't collect the ketubah. So, Amalam him Beit Shammai. So Beit Shammai said to Beit Hillel, "Itartem ervacha murav onatir mamon akal." So, which is a more severe thing in law: the possible sexual violation of a married woman marrying another man, or the granting of a certain amount of money to her as part of her ketubah payment? She says, "If we're going to allow her to marry, certainly we should allow her to receive the payment for the ketubah." And then Beit Hillel, so Beit Hillel answered back, "Matzinu." After all, we know that just because she comes and testifies that her husband's dead, we know that the brothers don't come and start inheriting what he has because you need two witnesses to that. So in the same way, she can't inherit her ketubah, as it were. I'm going to make Shammai, but Shammai says, no, but halom mi sefer ketubah no more. Look at the text of the ketubah. What does it say? If I die and you marry another man, then you get your ketubah. And look what happened. Based on the Ar Halacha of believing her, she's marrying another man, so she gets the ketubah. Again, like we had previously, Beit Hillel changed her mind and accepted Beit Shammai. They were persuaded and accepted Beit Shammai's position. Now, Amar Chista, Yamba Yivama, Nichanas Yamba, He made the following ruling. Let's say that a woman comes and testifies that the man died. The man has a brother. They have no kids. She accepts Yibum. The Avam, based on her testimony, goes and inherits the dead brother's stuff. Even though in a normal case, the brothers would not inherit. Hein darshu midrash ketubah, anu lin drash midrash Torah. After all, Beit Shammai was willing to darshan out of the language of the ketubah to look very carefully and use sort of almost a hermeneutic tool to infer from the Lashon of Ketubah, a halacha, certainly we can darshan out of the Torah. Yakum al shem achiv amet, amar achmana. Vareikam. After all, the Yavan takes the place of his brother, and we learned already in the earlier parakim that means that he inherits what the brother had. And after all, he's already taken his place, he already married her. If a woman comes to Beit Din, we're ruling now like Beit Hillel agreed, except that Beit Shammai is ruling that position. If a woman comes to Beit Din and says, my husband died, allow me to marry. We allow her to marry, and we give her the ketubah. But if she says, my husband died, give me the ketubah, she doesn't ask to remarry, she asks for the ketubah. We don't allow her even to marry. My time, I died to the ketubah. What's the reason? Because she came for the ketubah. In other words, it's clear from her first words that she came to collect the ketubah. She wanted the money. Therefore, we don't believe her because her motivation isn't, I want to be married, my husband's dead, I want to marry this other man, and therefore we don't believe her. What if she comes and says, my husband died, allow me to marry and give me the ketubah, and she says both. And the minute she says ketubah, even if it's the second thing, does that indicate that she's really coming for the money and we don't believe her? Or perhaps a person will tell the Beit Din everything they want. They want to marry, they want to do ketubah, but maybe her main motivation is to marry. If you're going to perhaps say, in a case like that, that we will believe her because the fact that she mentioned the ketubah is not a problem because she also mentioned her desire to marry. What if she flipped it and said, give me my ketubah and allow me to marry, meaning that the first thing that she talked about was the ketubah, mahu. Hachavada edat to the ketubah tai, do we say that here certainly she's coming for the ketubah because it's the first thing out of her mouth? Or perhaps she didn't know what's going to come out to her, so she just said everything at one shot, the ketubah, allow me to marry. So the answer is teiku, we really can't settle it. Okay, Hakolim Mani Mahayida, the next Mishnah, which is the first half of Mishnah Dalad, and this will take us to the end of this today's podcast. Hakolim Mani Mahayida, anybody can come and testify that this woman's husband died. This goes back to the first Mishnah. This goes back to the early Mishnayot. We talk about one witness testifying that a man died, allowing the woman to remarry. We believe that one witness, even a woman, even a shifcha, etc. But there's five exceptions. Chutz mechamota, her mother-in-law, meaning the man who supposedly is dead's mother, uvat chamota, her mother-in-law's daughter, which is her sister-in-law, but I'm saying it that way on purpose, you'll see in a minute, vitsarata, her co-wife, viyivimta, yivimta would be the woman who was presently married to her brother and her sister-in-law, but is married to her brother, that if indeed this man is dead, she's going to be mitiyabemet to become a co-wife with her. Uvat Ba'ala, her husband's daughter. All right, these five are not believed, and all of them have one reason. They're all people who have a likelihood of a strong dislike towards this woman, have every interest in messing her up, and for the most part, the dislike has to do with issues of Yerusha. Ma ben get lemita. So why is it that these five women, all of them, could be believed to bring her get and testify, and that's a fine testimony, and we allow them to bring the get, but they are not believed to testify that he died. The answer is quite clear, shaktav mochiach, because in the case of the get, there's a get that's sitting there, and that indicates that the get is real. As opposed to here, where it's only based on their testimony that we're believing the guy's dead, and these women all have an interest in messing this woman up and erasing her out of the family and out of the ketubah by having her marry somebody based on the notion that her husband's dead, but he's really not dead, and then when her husband shows up, she loses everything. Now, Ibayaluhu, Bat Chamiya Mahu, what about her father-in-law's daughter? In other words, her mother-in-law is dead, and her father-in-law has a daughter from that woman or from a different woman. Is she believed or not? In other words, we have to see, is this somebody who would typically dislike this woman? Tama de Bat Chamota, perhaps the reason that the mother-in-law's daughter is out, because this mother-in-law's daughter has a mother, I know the mother-in-law, who hates this woman, so the daughter-in-law goes along with it. And here there is no such mother. Perhaps the reason for a daughter-in-law being out, a mother-in-law's daughter being out, this woman is eating up all of the work that my mother did. In other words, my mother worked hard, and that's all going to go to the husband, and it's eventually coming to this woman, and I don't like her. She's also going to say she's eating up what could come out of my father's household. So Toshma, so the question is mother-in-law's daughter and father-in-law's daughter one piece or not? Toshma, Hakol Nimani Mahaida, Chutz V'Chamesh Nashim. Our Mishnah says there's only five that are out. V'Mi'ita Shita, according to you, it should be six. No, Dilmatan Bal Chamota, the Amra Ka'achal, your son to be Hashore, Loshna Bal Chamota, Loshna Bal Chamia. Maybe Bal Chamota Bal Chamia is just one person, meaning we don't distinguish between them and we don't give them a separate number because it's both for the same reason, because they're upset that this woman is eating from, she was from her family's estate. Now you just said there's five, but now we have a Mishnah that says seven. So the answer is Ahi Rabbi Yehuda Hi. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Now Rabbi Yehuda Mosif Af Eshet Av V'Hakala. He adds two more women to the non-credibility list. One of them is the father of this guy's wife, and the daughter-in-law, her daughter-in-law. Amrlo Eshet Av. So what did they respond to Rabbi Yehuda? They agreed with him, and they said Eshet Av Rabbi Bechal Batabal. Eshet Av is the same thing as the husband's daughter, because they are women who stand to lose by this woman getting the Yerusha. Kala, maybe Chal Chamotah, her daughter-in-law is in kind of included in the same concern as her mother-in-law. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Bishlam Chamotah sang it all the Kala. Rabbi Yehuda says, it's not true that they're in the same category. Meaning, everybody seems to agree that these seven are all out. The question is, do we count them as seven or five? Rabbi Yehuda says, Bishlam Chamotah sang it all the Kala. I understand that the mother-in-law doesn't like the daughter-in-law. Because she says she's eating my estate. Why would the daughter-in-law not like the mother-in-law? The answer is, I understand why the husband's daughter doesn't like this woman. She's eating up the estate that would come to me. My time is sung about the Baal. But why would the father's wife, which is what this woman is in Batabal, in the inverse, why would she dislike her? So, Elamai Mosif Tarti, so if that's the case, Rabbi Yehuda, that they don't have reason to hate them, why are you adding the men? Elakalamai Tamasani Lachamotati, he says, I'm adding them in because they have different reasons for hating them, which is why I made them separate on the list. Why would the Kala not like her mother-in-law? The Megala did not call the Avda. What happens is because she reveals to her son everything that's going on. And so therefore, there's a kind of a, this is now not a financial thing, but an emotional hatred. Right? Because she tells her father everything that's going on, and she tells her husband, that's this woman's father, everything that's going on, so the daughter naturally dislikes her. And Rabbanan say, just like water reflects a reflection, similarly hearts reflect each other. In other words, the way one person treats another, that person treats them in kind. And so therefore, the relationship is going to be, a corresponding relationship. Rabbi Yehuda says, Ahiva Divrei Torah Ktiv. That pasuk's not talking about relationships, it's talking about Torah. If you can share with somebody, then they're able to share back with you, etc. Rav Acha Bar Avya, Boimim Maravan, and there it's all, they ask the question. Chamotah Baal Achar Mikei. What if you have a mother-in-law who comes into the family afterwards? Mahu. Meaning she wasn't there when you got married. You got married, and then afterwards, the father-in-law, who was a widower, married this woman. And now, if she testifies that the husband died, her husband's son died, is that good testimony? Did she have in mind the possibility that the husband would die, and then this girl would fall to a yavam, this son, la'olo? Does she hate her or doesn't she hate her? That's the question. This woman who shows up afterwards. Toshma Amra Meit Bali V'Hakach Meit Chami. If a woman comes and says, "My husband died, and then my father-in-law died," Tinasei V'Titok Ktubah. This woman can get married and take a ktubah. V'Chamota Asura. But the mother-in-law, who according to this now died and is Kukali Yavam. Because according to this, the husband, who we now assume is the only child of that family, died first, and then the husband died. Because we're really saying that none of this happened. And why did the woman say it? She's trying to mess up her mother-in-law and have her marry inappropriately. Maybe that case is a little bit different because there she already saw that they already had a relationship, they already had an interaction, it was unpleasant, and therefore she's trying to mess her up, as opposed to a normal case where she comes afterwards, there would be no reason to mess her up, and therefore we would not think that she would want to hurt her, and therefore she would be believed. So the question is left really unanswered. Toby, we'll finish the parak and Yitzhak Hashem on the next podcast.